necessary distance. From The Gods Have Horns by Saltiside and Shadow Wasserson. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based upon the works of Andrew Hussey. One. Names. You have names beyond number. You are known across a galaxy of galaxies, from the subspace disk and the Rolona filament to Harris Huttle II and the economic principality of Firkant. You were born heir to a throne, and then you ascended beyond a need for thrones. For 10 billion years and more, your countless names have passed through lips, fluttered on phosphorescent skins, and been signed by tentacles and limbs stranger yet, all in prayers and homage to you. They have called you Leviathan Mother, she who has 10,000 claws, the one in Relex, the venomous snake. But of all your uncountable names, there is one which only fools and stalwarts fail to shudder at. Once upon a time, you took on the title of the Witch of Life. But before that, before everything else, your name was Feferi Pyxes. 2. You stretch your jaws, not bothering to conceal a yawn as you follow Salix Captor down the halls of the Skyanet complex. He said that the business was urgent, and your presence was needed right fucking now. You wouldn't have guessed it from how slowly he leads you down, how he refuses to tell you anything at all. What is he to you? Matesprit? Auspistus? Moirel? Kismesis? He has been all these things to you, and other things which the old Alternian tongue cannot describe. 15 billion years is too long to stay in just one quadrant. But for right now, the two of you are nothing. It's too bad. Perhaps in another century, he will be something once again. In the bowels of the installation, Salix pauses. He adjusts his dirty old lab coat and then opens the door. Oh, gods, meet the new, he says as your eyes adjust to the dimness of the room. There are a pair of children inside, infants, human. 100 thoughts rise up inside you. Why are they here? Where are their parents? Did Salix steal them away for some reason you can only guess at? Or if they're orphans, why have they not been left at the roadside? Or whatever it is that humans do with abandoned young. What is it that Salix is planning to do with them? What does he mean, the new gods? It is the last question which you decide to voice. It worked, he says. He leaves you to mull that over for a few seconds. You rebuilt the game. But how? You've only been at work for a few years. Salix nods. We won't succeed for years, but the board is getting set up. And he'd sent them. He nods again. And what do you need me for? They need a guardian, a mentor, someone who can help them, keep them away from attention. So you ask me. Aradia said that you were the best choice. Everyone knows that you like to keep your projects under wraps. Even Vriska wouldn't bother you if you set aside space to raise a few mortals. You look at the children, still so young, and run the back of your claw against the male's cheek. It would be foolish to try and fight the future, you think? And anyway, there is something stirring in you, an instinct for companionship, a yearning for company. You've created countless living creatures over the eons, but you've never been a mother before. Not really. What are their names, you ask? Salix smiles. They don't have names yet. You'll take them. Your wigglers, your little grubs. They are going to be gods. You will never have to watch them die. 3. For the first few years, they continue to go unnamed. They need none, and they have earned none. It's better to not be named for now. How could you know what will fit them when they are so young? It is not until they are 4 years old that you give them their names. You take them from Hebrew, but in a modernized, abbreviated form that will not attract notice. Jake. To supplant, to assail, to hold the heel. It was the first place where he bit you, but not the last. Perhaps the boy had thought himself a shark. It means to follow as well, to be left behind. And in this the name also serves him well, just as well you might have named him Shadow. He follows you around so much. Jane. The creators are merciful, are gracious. For she has already demonstrated how she will extend an open hand to all the worlds in her demesne. It will break her. It will be the seed of greater strength after she heals. The world of nature is not all red in tooth and claw, and her nurturing touch will be a boon once she has tempered it with the edge of necessity. Harley. Jake and Jane Harley. From the Hare's Meadow, it means. Or from the Eagle's Meadow. No one will look twice at them, should they need to move about among mortals, not until they have attained the godhood which is their birthright, and then they will have names beyond numbering. Your only regret is that you will not be able to see it for yourself. But as you look at the stars of this universe and long for their presence, their voices, once again, you shall comfort yourself in the knowledge that they are only gone from here. And in some other place, they are still alive. 4. You brush your knuckles against the back of Jane's head, just as your Lucis did with her tendrils when you were young. She nestles her head into the crook of your neck. You whisper soft lullabies, the ones which Glubglub sang for you so long ago. It was years before you realized that you were copying your Lucis in your whispers. You continued anyway. All three of you found it comforting, you and the children. You keep her wrapped in your arms as you reassure her that you are not disappointed, and you're not. Jane's weakness was not her fault, but yours. She is 11, and perhaps a little old to be coddled like this, but you don't particularly care for what humans do. You are not human.
Mother,
she says, her voice shaking. And you run your fingers through her hair. It's not like having a Moirel, not quite. But on the surface, it looks somewhat similar. I'm proud of you, you say. I am so very proud of you. You've come a long way, and you will go further still, my puntita. When you found her, during your first attempt at surviving on her own, she was laying in the shade, parched to near death, breathing so shallowly you almost feared you were too late. But Jane couldn't die. She couldn't. It was fated. But if she died and you'd brought life back to her, rose her up, you know her mind would be empty and a goddess with no soul would be.
Please, Mother, I can't. I won't be able to.
You will, you will. I believe in you so utterly. She is strong. She just needs to believe it, needs to try again to look for water sooner.
Mother, don't.
Hush. You are a wonderful girl and you are growing stronger every day. But this is important for you in so many ways.
Mother, please don't make me do it. I'm just gonna fail.
You healed her, snatched her from the brink of death and brought her home. But now that she's rested, it's time to try again. You move your hand from the back of Jane's head to cup her face and turn her to look at you with her big blue eyes. Jane, you won't fail. I know you won't. Call it a mother's intuition. But you need to tell yourself that you won't fail or your prophecy will fulfill itself. Now say, I can do it, aloud.
I can do it.
Jane's voice wavers, and her eyes look to the side. Say, I will survive.
I will survive.
Again.
I will survive.
Again, make me believe it.
I will survive.
Her voice is hoarse, but louder, and almost sounds like it holds conviction. There. You move your hand to the back of her head again, stroking her hair, and your voice once more becomes gentle. You can do it, Jane. I know you can. You hold her until she sleeps, and the next day you bring her to the island and let her go. A test run to show her strength against adversity. She survives, as you knew she would, and you heal her wounds with a mother's pride. They will sing praises to her in eons to come, hymns and psalms to the glory of her name. Jane Harley, God of the New World. Jane Harley, the daughter of her mother. 5. Say it again. We were wrong. You lied to me. What did you expect us to think? We didn't know that the game would give us these extras. At least Salix has the decency to look appropriately ashamed. Your children are not going to become gods. Their names. How hollow their names now seem to you. A mockery, a taunt. They are going to die. You have gotten too close to them. You thought you were safe. That they weren't mortals. But they are. And you aren't. They can have no place with you. That much is clear. You will not be able to keep the necessary distance. You would pervert them. They are life. They are mortal. They will never ascend. Already you can feel yourself beginning to entertain thoughts of prolonging their lives, keeping them at your side until the stars burn out. They were not made for that, to handle the weight of ages without end. They were born to die. 6. You don't bother with trying to prepare them for the news. There is nothing that you can say that could ease their pain, and of little point to it. Better to keep the blow swift and sharp and clean than to drag this out slowly. When you speak, you keep your voice smooth and level, betraying not a hint of uncertainty. Over the eons, you've grown quite good at masking your feelings in the trappings of divinity. Besides, if they hate you, then they will gather strength from that. But they will reap only weakness if weakness is what they see in you. As it turns out, we were wrong about you. You are not going to become gods. Our mistake. Anyway, you're both old enough now to grow up. So you're going to leave. They beg. They plead. They call you mother. Such a name. Mother. Mother. A billion civilizations and more have called you their mother, but none of them like your children have done. And you will never hear it again. There is a spike of grief and you banish it. Love is a chemical, is biology. You can shut it off by merely thinking about it. Prevent yourself from feeling this maternal pain. There will be ample time for that indulgence later. It's not about love. It's not about you at all. It's never been about them, not really. It's about the game. The end of the world. You were a fool to think it was about anything else. I just can't invest any more energy in you two. I'm going to take the bubble down now, so you should leave before you drown. 7. You fly. In the space of a heartbeat, you have flown further than you have ever flown before, reached expanses never seen by any of the gods. You descend, gently, upon the first life-bearing world you find. A world which has never before seen the gods or known their power. And with a thought, you begin to unleash devastation. You unleash plagues that spread and kill in moments. You create monsters. You kill them in ones and twos, and you kill them by the millions as you twist their bones and warp their hearts. This is part of life. This is okay. You are not stepping beyond your role at all. Sometimes something unexpected happens. Sometimes disaster strikes. Sometimes there are meteors, and the world you love is destroyed forever. That's all that this is about. Meteors. It has been days or months when the world freezes around you. I must be swamping you with work, you say, the tinge coloring your voice. There have been worse days, Arati replies. You have a lot of nerve showing yourselves to me, you snarl. You knew they wouldn't be gods. I did, she acknowledges. You bare your fangs, then incline your head in the direction of your latest masterpiece. How do you like it? You're wasting your time. Besides, she adds, there was a learning curve involved. You want to fly away, find another world where you won't be bothered. It doesn't matter that she'll know where it is before you do, but her last statement hangs in the air and forces a response. What do you mean? There will be another. No. You had to have this so that you would raise her well.
Her?
You stammer, as the tinge fades out of your voice. Aradia puts her hands on your shoulders. She will be named Jade, for the color of her eyes. You open your mouth to say more. What are her favorite foods? Does she like being read to at night? How does she wear her hair? Aradia disappears before you can say anything at all, and the words die on the edge of your lips. It is only after you have left your waste of twisted bodies that you realize that you have already begun to think of her in the present tense. She hasn't been born, and yet she is already here. Jade. Her name will be Jade. 8. You see her eyes when you sleep. You wonder what shade of green they will be. But Aradia won't talk with you again, no matter how much you want to pump her for more information. You kill another world just to entice her to speak with you, and still she never shows herself. You don't need to sleep, but you find yourself doing it more and more often anyway. Sleeping lets the days go by faster. How long will it be? As the years turn into decades and Jake and Jane grow older, you begin to despair. You wonder if Aradia has lied to you, but you banish the possibility. She always tells the truth, you tell herself. She doesn't have to lie. She prefers to let you fill in the gaps with misconceptions and choke on them. Really, you just can't bear the thought that she lied to you. So you while away the days, deep in thought about diversity and designer biologies, the sound of her laugh, the color of her hair. You experiment and craft as you always do, building new forms of life as if you were a potter at the wheel. You wonder if she will like this one. And you sleep, because in your dreams you can forget yourself and pretend that she's already here. There is nothing worse than the sensation of waking up. It feels like falling. 9. The bark beast was here before any of your kind were. None of you understood it. For a time, you all thought that it had something to do with Kanaya. Even she did for a little bit. But it certainly never listened to her. It was Aradia, of course, who settled the matter. But all she saw fit to say was that it had nothing to do with any of you. It remembers you, though. You don't know how many centuries it's been since you last saw each other, but it remembers you. The bark beast follows close behind you as you enter the house, and it whines quietly when you stop at the foot of the stairs. This is Jake's house. He's here. Just up the steps, 3 doors down on the right, he's here. You start moving again, and you don't stop until you've reached the top. You haven't come here to see him. You don't know if you could see him without waking him, and you don't want to see the look on his face when he sees you. But the girl sleeps like the dead. She doesn't even twitch when you open the door and stride into her room. You sit on the floor next to her bed and just look at her. You still don't know what shade of green her eyes are, but she is here. She is here, and one day you will be able to look at her when her eyes are open, and that is enough. You glance back to the bark beast. Jake named him Becquerel. A good name for a good bark beast, you think. You tuck a strand of hair behind Jade's ears, and then you leave. Soon. 10. This isn't for him at all. You know he wouldn't want this. What do you know about what he wants? Have you ever even talked with Jake? I have watched him from afar. I have spoken with his lovers. I have seen him in countless frozen moments as I have tended to others. But more than this, I have spoken with you from a time when you have regretted it. You calm. Then you... I will do it. She shakes her head. Just once. But she does not need to do it any more than that. But he will not forgive you. He deserves it, at least. What he deserves, Aradia replies, is a life that none of us were going to allow him from the start. 11. You had to kill him. This is what you tell yourself when the memory of it grows too painful. His kind are meant to die. And he was trying to keep you away from her still. You know that he saw the future. You know that he saw Jade in a time years distant from now. You will see him one last time. You have made and will make sure of that. Amietin Duclet, you whisper. Sitawakfluketchama. Aradia has spoken with her just once. Solix comes about once a month. Eridan, slightly less than that, and Terazi slightly more. You would be jealous of how much Jade likes her, but Terazi prefers to speak with Jade for only brief periods of time. In the early mornings just after your daughter has woken up. Jade is yours, and yours alone. You brush your knuckles against her once again, and she nestles ever deeper in your long locks of hair. She is 7, but she is short for her age, and you are tall for any human. And so she almost manages to disappear into the folds of your robes and the quilt that has been draped around you both. You continue to rub her head and tighten your hold on her with your other arm. Through that part of you which is most intimately tied up with the aspect of life, you are made aware of the increased release of oxytocin that occurs in response to your actions. Other chemicals flow through your own body at the same time. Some of them in response to the knowledge that your daughter is content. A few of them do not have names because you made them yourself and never revealed them to the world. You remodeled your physiology, your hormones, and your brain structure to take on aspects that would promote bonding and attachment to Jake and Jane once upon a time and now to Jade. Despite the pain, you have never been able to swallow the idea of ridding yourself of these qualities that make you just as much a Lucis as you are a troll or a god. It is raining outside, and you can hear the drizzle and the pitter-pat through the large window that the two of you are sitting under. It makes for a lovely background to your nursery songs. You love the rain, Jade loves the rain. More than anything else, you love that she loves it. More than anything else, you love her. But that was evident from the start. There is a peal of thunder, but it is far away and not so loud that you cannot hear what she says amid the quiet roar. You tighten your grip around her and stiffen in reflex when you register her words.
Can you?
She yawns a little bit.
Can you tell me the story of the fox sister again, Mom?
You have never called her your daughter. You have never told her that you were her mother. You were afraid. You were afraid, and yet you needed to hear this so desperately. And it was not until this moment that you knew how much you were starving for the name. And yet... She never calls you that again. You wonder why, of course. But you were too afraid to ask, too afraid of what the answer might be. So instead it haunts your dreams, the fantasies that you have only because you needed so much to hear it again that you were willing to brave the nightmares and suffer the wasted hours, until you hate that you ever have to wake up at all. The only thing that pulls you back from the brink is the worried expression that you see on Jade's face when you wake up one time to find her beside you, holding vigil.
You were asleep for 2 days, she tells you.
And you were thankful that you fell asleep where you did. Because you realized that she only ate at all because the kitchen was so close to you. You don't sleep again. Nor do you ever hear Jade call you by that most precious of names. And you will always wonder why. What it was that you did wrong. Or that you failed to do.
For the text of this and other stories by the same authors, visit the AO3 pages of Call Me Salticide and Shadow_Wasserson. Suburban Jungle by Michael Guy Bowman. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find links to other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and various ways to support me. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.